You're listening to Comedy Central.
Does anyone celebrate Apple here? No? No one who observes Apple? Okay. Apple made big news. They announced that starting next year, they're gonna allow people to fix their own phones now, which is huge. Yeah, people are super excited. They're like, yes, finally, I can fix my, which is also like, shows you how smart Apple is. Like, cause now they've just tricked us into fixing our own phones. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I get to fix my own. Wait, how does this, wait, how do you put the screen on the, I mean, have you tried just to put like a screen cover on your phone? Just a screen protector. Have you ever tried to do that? Now you're gonna be there fixing your own phone. Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. Apple's probably there like, yeah, no, you guys try and then we'll see you. We'll see you at the store. Yeah. You'll have a cracked screen and then you'll come in later with like, just like 500 pieces begging to get the new iPhone. Please, I don't know what happened, guys. Please. It's still a good thing though. It's good because it means now you can get the phone fixed at like a professional repair store. You don't have to go to Apple. And also it means we no longer have to take it to the genius bar. That was the thing I resented the most. Those smug people. Yeah, I'm a genius. No, you're not. You just know how to fix the phone and I don't. You just have a special screwdriver. Now I have to call you a genius because you have a screwdriver that I don't have. You're not a genius. You're just a well-tooled individual. Don't tell me I'm a genius. You know what I mean? It's not a genius. Genius who can figure quantum things out. Well, you just like screw the phone. Welcome to the genius bar. Now, yeah, look at me now. Look at me. Now, I am the genius.
Coming to you from the heart of Times Square in New York City, the only city in America, it's The Daily Show. Here's a vision. Tonight, other countries have issues too. Giving thanks on the cheap. And Halle Berry. This is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to The Daily Show. I'm Trevor Noah. Let's jump straight into today's headlines. And there is a lot going on today. Now, obviously, the new Adele album drops at midnight, which means you're about to be able to tell who's going through a breakup through your walls. The judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial took a bathroom break and let Kyle be the judge while he was gone. Yeah, which I've never seen before, but he insists is totally normal. And two men who were framed for the killing of Malcolm X 50 years ago were finally exonerated. Which means the real killer could be anyone in this room. But while American news is always breaking, it's also good to remember that other countries have news too. All right, let's kick things off with Russia. The fictional country depicted in Creed 2. They're also the real-life country that likes invading other countries. And now, they might be back on their bullshit.
Overseas tonight, in the growing concern involving Russia, the U.S. is warning Russia may be weighing a potential invasion of Ukraine. Satellite images tonight showing Russian troops and equipment gathering about 142 miles north of the border with Ukraine.
Despite an estimated 100,000 Russian troops gathering along their border, Ukrainian forces appear confident and prepared for battle. After years of pushing for membership, the Eastern European country is still not a part of NATO, meaning they don't have treaty protection if Russia invades. Although this hasn't stopped the Americans, British, and French from offering statements of support.
We are going to watch very closely as the Russian Federation chooses its actions in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah, that's what I want from my allies, is for them to watch very closely as someone whips my ass. Guys, I'm getting attacked! Don't worry, man, we're watching them land every punch. Yo, Donnell, you recording, right? Yeah, we got you, boy, we got you. We see them beating your ass. If you're Ukraine, this situation sucks, man, because Russia are the bad guys, right? But it doesn't seem like the world is willing to get into a war to protect Ukraine. And can I be honest? Can I be honest with you? I think it's because people don't have a personal connection to Ukraine. Like, if Russia was invading Italy, or France, well, people would do something about it. Oh no, the art, the Colosseum, we have to protect it. Like if I was Ukraine, I would have bought the worldwide rights to all the Seinfeld reruns. Then people would care. If you don't protect us from Russia, you will never again see Kramer open door like crazy. Also, this is genius timing from Russia, right? You realize it's not a mistake. Because anyone who knows history knows you're not gonna send troops into Russia at the beginning of winter. So basically, Russia has like, what, 5 months to do whatever they want. Yeah, the rest of the world is going to be standing by like, this will not stand, Russia. Your ass is going to pay as soon as mid-April rolls around. It depends on what the groundhog says. And like, why does Russia even need more land? Have you seen Russia? It's huge. Why are you doing this? Like, I would get if Monaco wanted to invade another country. I mean, they're running out of closet space, but Russia? Now, while Russia is getting ready to invade, another country in Europe is setting up a different kind of invasion because they're not using tanks or missiles, they're using immigrants.
Turning out of the border crisis, this one playing out in Europe as thousands of migrants try to enter the European Union from Belarus.
These are the front lines of what the European Union says is a hybrid war. The EU accusing Belarus's dictator Alexander Lukashenko of using migrants as weapons, purposefully luring them into Belarus from countries like Iraq and Syria by promising them easy access to Europe. Poland then refusing to let them in, Belarus refusing to take them back, leaving thousands of people stuck in the middle.
Man, come on, people, this is just dirty. Basically, what's going on is that for a while now, the European Union has been imposing sanctions on Alexander Lukashenko, the dictator of Belarus and Eastern Europe's MyPillow guy. And you see, he's been stealing elections, he's been cracking down on protesters, jailing journalists, basic dictator shit. And now, Lukashenko is trying to get back at the European Union by flying in migrants from the Middle East and then sending them into Poland to create a border crisis, which is the most passive-aggressive military tactic I have ever heard of. This is like when your parents start cooking with peanuts to get you to move out of the house because they know you're allergic. It's a dick move. And obviously everyone is really mad about this, not just because it's inhumane to these migrants, but because unlike Ukraine, we can't let anything happen to Poland. I mean, that's where all our water comes from. Because you realize, people, this is especially cruel. Right? It's especially cruel to these migrants. These are real people who are just trying to live better lives. It is disgusting to use them as weapons. I mean, say what you want about Drake and Kanye's beef, but at least they didn't catapult Mexicans at each other. But let's move on. Because while Belarus is trying to destabilize Poland, there's another country that's already on the brink of collapse.
Ethiopia, where a brutal year-long conflict has forced millions out of their homeland and is threatening to disintegrate into an all-out civil war.
Rebels from Tigray province appear to be advancing toward the capital, Addis Ababa. Ethiopia's prime minister called for national unity, and authorities in Addis Ababa rounded up ethnic Tigrayans today.
2 weeks ago, the State Department urged all Americans to leave Ethiopia. But with echoes of Afghanistan, the State Department doesn't know or won't say how many Americans are in the country.
Last week, the State Department did make a point of saying there would be no Afghan-style evacuation for Americans stuck in Ethiopia. They did, however, offer to help them get on commercial flights out.
Yeah, this is tough news for Ethiopians, and this is tough news for Americans in Ethiopia. Because in Afghanistan, the US government staged an all-out airlift. Meanwhile, in Ethiopia, they're like, might we suggest Priceline.com? Like, I don't even know what that means. What do they mean when they say the State Department will help you book a commercial flight out? That's not helpful. People know how to book flights. That's like going, hey, you, do you need a ride? Do you need a ride? Yeah, well, I'm happy to help. So what you gotta do is open Uber on your phone, then you hit request a ride. Best of luck, buddy. Also, flying commercial is the worst way to evacuate a war zone. Can you imagine that stress?
Please, please, the soldiers are coming. We need to get out now.
Sir, are you a Diamond Medallion member? Okay, please step aside. Anyone in Group A or above, we're boarding you now. Sir, please stand back. Just relax, thank you.
And you know who this is a great opportunity for though, right? Alexander Lukashenko. Yeah, I bet he's already sliding into American DMs like, I can hook you up with the free private flights to the Polish border. Are you interested? But you got a feel for Ethiopians, man, because anytime their country's in the news, it is either because of war or famine or some long-distance runner broke the world record, which are all pretty extreme things if you think about it. I feel like we need more coverage of just like regular-ass Ethiopians, you know, who can't run, don't know how to fight, and just want to chill. And please understand this, please understand. This is a really complicated and sensitive story, right? Because for about a year now, the government has been at war with a rebel group. But that's like the simplified version because there are so many layers of this conflict that we just don't have the time to do it justice. This is a huge beef with a history that goes back decades involving rival ethnic groups, different territories, foreign interference, because African conflicts are never simple. They're super complicated. And everyone has different versions of events. They're basically like white people conflict, but with more seasoning. So from Russia's military to migrants in Belarus and armies in Ethiopia, people everywhere are on the move. Meanwhile, in India, the only place people might be moving to is back inside.
Smothered by smog, a toxic haze hanging over New Delhi, and it is raising the level of air pollution to dangerous levels. Schools in the Indian capital have shut their doors until further notice, and private construction banned, at least for now.
India's Environmental Ministry panel on air pollution has directed Delhi and other states to encourage private offices to allow work from home. But for street vendors, staying home is not an option.
The pollution is unbearable. The government must take some steps. We are forced to work because we can't stay indoors forever.
For now, Delhi's residents will be inhaling this toxic air, which, according to a report by the University of Chicago, is 10 times worse in northern India than anywhere else in the world.
God damn, did you hear that? The air in New Delhi right now is 10 times worse than anywhere else in the world. That means you'd be better off just sticking your face in that steam that comes out of the ground in New York City. Which, by the way, what is that shit? Like, is there a fire down there? I've lived here for many years. I still don't understand what that is. Like, someone dry cleaning a rat? What? I feel like it's worth looking into. No one? Just me? You know, one detail I like from the story is that the Indian government put together an environmental ministry panel on air pollution who confirmed that the air was indeed polluted. You don't need a panel. I don't know why they did that. Why do governments like doing this? You just need eyes. Yes, after 3 years of study, we have concluded that Delhi's air is brown and that this is bad. But you see, this is a great example of why we all need to move to cleaner energy. Because yes, it is expensive to do, but it is also hella expensive to constantly shut down the economy when your city turns into a sandstorm from Dune. Except this time, Timothy Chalamet isn't there to make you feel better with that smile. And you might be like, well, Trevor, why don't they just start carpooling in India? My man, they're way ahead of you and it's still not enough. It's actually a real rough spot for India because as a nation, you want to keep modernizing. You want to keep growing, but then the fallout of those effects make it so that you can't even enjoy the fruits of modernization. You know, it's almost like someone who gets really into CrossFit to help them attract women, but then they push everyone away because they can't stop talking about the fact that they joined CrossFit. Now, those abs are useless. And you wouldn't be able to tell this from the story, but New Delhi is one of the most beautiful places in the world. I mean, this is what it looked like last year after months of lockdown and the smog dissipating. But now, it's back to looking like it's stuck on a permanent sepia filter. All right, but let's move on to our final international story. And like most things in the world, this story was made in China.
The royalty of professional tennis expressing concern about the welfare of one of their own.
Honestly, it's shocking, you know, that she's missing.
Peng Shuai, a Chinese tennis champion, hasn't been seen or heard from in weeks. In early November, Peng published this bombshell post on her Chinese social media account, an open letter to a former top communist leader named Zhang Gaoli, now aged 75, who Peng accuses of sexually assaulting her after the two had an affair. Shortly after the controversial post, Peng's online profile more or less disappeared.
Until recently, Peng Shuai was one of the biggest tennis stars in China. But look what happens when you try to search for people with her name in the Chinese internet. You get the message, no results found. Censors have all but scrubbed this woman from the Chinese internet.
Now today, a new twist, with Chinese state media releasing this email purportedly written by Peng to the head of the Women's Tennis Association. It completely disavows the previous allegations of sexual assault, adding, I'm not missing, nor am I unsafe, and I hope Chinese tennis will become better and better.
Yo, this is really disturbing. Someone speaks out about sexual assault, and then China's government just makes them disappear? And then what's even worse is that they release some bullshit email pretending like everything is fine? Because come on, people. That email from the tennis star was as legit as the letters I got from my supermodel girlfriend in fifth grade. She's coming next year, guys, I swear. This is what makes China so terrifying. Like, if you're on their good side, well, things are great. But if you try to tell the truth about how China is a country that constantly oppresses.
Trevor Noah 去度假了，我们祝他一切顺利。
What the hell was that? I'm not even in China. Look, man, it's one thing for your government to come after you. It's another thing for them to just make you never exist. I mean, they scrubbed the internet of anything about this tennis player. Do you know how hard it is to get stuff off of the internet? Only China can do that. In fact, if you have embarrassing pictures online or problematic tweets, just move to China and talk shit about the Communist Party. Yeah, they'll clean up your reputation in no time. I mean, yeah, you'll be locked in a basement somewhere, but hey, at least you didn't get canceled. And this also really puts into perspective when people in America complain about being censored by big tech. Oh, Twitter took down my tweet. This is a tyranny. Guys, Peng Shui literally does not exist on the internet anymore. Like, yeah, maybe Trump can't tweet right now, but you can still Google him. Trust me, just yesterday I searched for Donald Trump big butt photos. I got 80 million hits. And no, I'm not gonna tell you why I Googled that. I like big butts and I cannot lie. All right, that's all the time we have for international news. When we come back, we'll tell you how you can survive the most expensive Thanksgiving of all time. And Halle Berry is still joining me on the show. You don't want to miss it. Welcome back to The Daily Show. Thanksgiving is just around the corner. But with the price of groceries these days, a big dinner could be more expensive than buying Yeezys for your Lamborghini. Fortunately, Desi Leidick has come up with some tips for celebrating Thanksgiving on a budget.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. They say that this year is going to be the most expensive Thanksgiving ever. Inflation is hitting everything. Groceries, cookware, decorative gourds, even the really ugly, bumpy ones. I know I'm tightening my belt this year, but don't worry, you can still have an amazing Thanksgiving without breaking the bank. Let's start with the turkey. This year, turkey prices are almost double what they were a few years ago, but there are still deals out there if you know how to shop smart. For instance, did you know that you could get factory reject turkeys at Butterball outlet stores nationwide? This one only costs $10, and it has three necks, so there's even more to go around. You can also check Craigslist for some perfectly good, gently used turkeys. Now, why should this go to a landfill just because one person already owned it? But if your turkey budget is zero, here's a great hack. You just trace your hand. Now we're gonna wanna do a little beak and some googly eyes. Voila! How cute is this little turkey? Now you're gonna wanna drench this bad boy in olive oil. No one likes a dry turkey. We're gonna wanna roast this at 400 degrees for about 1 hour. Of course, you can't have turkey without stuffing, but you don't need to take out a second mortgage or start an OnlyFans to pay for all the ingredients that you need. Most of us have perfectly good stuffing already right inside our kids' teddy bears. I'm just gonna wanna get in there. Just gonna wanna take the stuffing, scoop it out, just shove it in that bird, get it in there, roast it. It's gonna soak up all those flavors and really help the turkey keep its shape. And the best stuffing is right in the face. Let's talk side dishes, because this is where the dollars can really start adding up. One of my favorites is mashed potatoes. They're delicious, and I have a simple trick for making a little go a long way. So you just make one mashed potato, chew it up. Spit it back out. And then you want to just pass it around the table for everyone to enjoy. They're mashed anyway, so it will not affect the texture or flavor at all. What about drinks? Most of the grown-ups at the table are probably going to want a nice glass of wine, especially when Uncle Steve starts talking about QAnon, and that can get expensive fast. But fortunately, you can get the same pleasant buzz at a fraction of the price with paint thinner. I'm detecting notes of my garage and just a hint of the previous owners of my house who left this behind when they moved. This also pairs well with the hallucinations. hallucinations. Now, to the most important part of the meal, dessert. Pumpkin pie can get expensive, whether you're making it from scratch, buying it from the store, or buying it from the store and saying you made it from scratch, then carrying the shame and guilt of that lie for the rest of your life. But why spend money when we already have so much pumpkin spice stuff around the house? Like this scented candle I got for my Secret Santa 3 years ago. It's an absolute garbage gift, but wait until you taste it in a dessert. Just cook it at, I don't know, 200, 500. Honestly, it doesn't even make a difference because as you can see, it comes out perfect every time. And for all of you thinking about holiday weight gain, wax is not digestible, so no worries there. Comes out the same as it goes in.
Am I a champion?
Finally, if you really want to save money on Thanksgiving, just remember the original spirit of the holiday and do what the pilgrims did. Steal. They stole food, land, even valuables from Native American graves. So why not take a page from history and steal whatever you need? Hey, with Christmas around the corner, go ahead and steal whatever you want for that too. Look, I'm Santa. Ho, ho, ho. Ooh, my paper turkey's ready. Mm, yum. No. Shit. Better get this out of here. Evacuate!
All right, when we come back, the one and only Halle Berry will be joining me in the studio. So don't go away. Welcome back to The Daily Show. My guest tonight is Oscar, Emmy, and Golden Globe winning actor Halle Berry. She's here to talk about making her directorial debut in the new film, Bruised. Ooh, Halle Berry.
It was rough.
It looked rough.
Yes.
It looked extremely rough. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here, but I'm not gonna lie. I was genuinely surprised in like such a fun way watching this movie because I've seen you kick ass in a lot of films, all right? I've seen you act your heart out in so many films. But I don't know why, for me, this movie felt like a culmination of everything coming together. You know, it was Halle Berry the fighter, it was Halle Berry the actress, it was Halle Berry, you know, feeling pain, showing moments of joy. It felt like it was a culmination of a lot of just you as a human being. Congratulations on your directorial debut. What was that like?
Thank you. Wow. It's funny you said that because you know what? I felt that way too. And being at the helm and being in charge, I could put all of that into the movie. I could play to, you know, not only my strengths, but to the strengths of all the characters. You
know, I can only imagine.
Movie, all the actors, so yes.
The story has such a fascinating beginning. This was a story that wasn't originally written for you.
No.
You know, it went out, I think it was to Blake Lively, and people were like, oh, it's this Irish Catholic white woman, and it's gonna be the story of this 20-something-year-old scrappy UFC fighter. And you saw the story and you said, I think there's a different way to tell this story.
Yeah, and you know, the idea came because I desperately wanted to play this character. I love the fight game. I've been a boxing fan since I was a kid. I was now, when I got this script, an avid MMA fan, especially of all the women in the sport. So when I read it, I thought, this is the kind of role that I would kill for.
I love that.
Meaty, it's juicy. I get to use all of my physicality, except it wasn't written for someone like me. So that was the impetus for reimagining it. And I told my agents, if Blake decides not to do this, can you please let me get to the producers and give them my pitch on how and why I think a reimagining would be in order. And for me, I felt like based on where we are in the world and, you know, Time's Up and Me Too and where we as black women and black people are arriving to, it's time that we get a chance to tell our stories from our own point of view through our lens. And so I said, if we're going to remake a fight movie, they've been made by the greats, some of the best movies, Rocky and Fight Club and Million Dollar Baby. If we're gonna redo it, the only reason to do it is to have a fresh new point of view, something we've never seen. And we've never seen it, a black female fighter, but especially from a black female director.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
So it was new. There was a reason to do it.
Yeah, and you know what? It also feels like it comments on so many things. You know, so as a fan of UFC, I'm sure you know what it feels like on the inside. You know, I've talked to some of the female fighters in the UFC where they go, man, we feel like we have to be so much more brutal to get acknowledged. We have to feel like we have to fight so much harder to just maintain our spot in that octagon. Mm. And they do get the respect, but they really, really, really have to work towards it. And it feels like it's no different in Hollywood, you know, yeah. Is that a woman in Hollywood, especially a black woman in Hollywood, yeah. You have to fight so much harder to be recognized. You have to be, you know, I mean, everyone would think Halle Berry wins the Oscar, and then it's like, this is it. You know, it seems like it's like, oh, this is going to be the end of your life. You get to do whatever you like. But you've had to continue working hard to fight for what you want to do in the industry.
True. One of the big misconceptions was that when I won that Oscar, that somehow the script truck just backed up to the front door. Like, no truck came. My fight didn't really get any easier. I still had to face that I was a black woman in an industry, and there was no real way for me that had been paved. I had to figure that out for myself. And as with fighting, Shannon Knapp, who runs Invicta, you know, the all-female league, she told me that having her female fighters, when she went to a venue, she would have to pay to come to the venue, where with the male fighters, they would pay them. So it is indelibly harder for women across the board, and especially in the fight game.
You know, the movie was, it's brutal is the best way to put it. And it's brutal in the way that life is brutal, is the way I see it. And I couldn't help wondering, as Halle Berry, the actress, have you often felt like, man, you're always fighting to keep your career where you want it to be, as opposed to letting people decide when and where you're done? Because you come from a generation where, let's be honest, they would go, you're 40 and it's over for you.
Yeah.
So many actresses talk about that, 40 and done. And now it seems like the fight is working and changing that perspective.
Yeah, theoretically, I should have been done a decade ago.
Damn.
You know? But I do feel that. And as a woman, I do feel like that. I have to keep fighting and keep reinventing and keep, you know, proving that there's still, you know, more left for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually feel that there's more left for me to do. I'm still inspired by this career, by this craft. I still love what I do. I want to keep challenging myself and keep growing. I want to see how long I could stay in this physical shape and do these kinds of movies.
Right, right.
You know, that's the joy of it. I want to try new things. You know, I want to take new risks.
How long can you stay in this physical shape? You broke how many ribs during this movie?
Two
ribs broken in this movie.
Yes.
I remember distinctly, because I'm a big fan, John Wick, you broke ribs as well. Three ribs.
Three on that. So I'm getting better.
I mean, I guess. It's still
next
five
one will
ribs.
Just be one.
It's still five ribs in total. There's a lot of ribs. Same ribs or different ribs?
Different ribs. Because here's the thing. But here's the thing that I would like people to know. It's not just, oh, Halle Berry always gets hurt. When you are a performer that does your own stunts, that's par for the course. Every stunt man, stunt woman, usually on every film, gets hurt in some way. We don't hear about it because they don't talk about it and the public doesn't really care.
Okay.
That's their job, right? So when a performer gets hurt, it becomes a big deal because most performers don't do their own stunts. So they don't get hurt. So I sort of get this bad rap of always getting hurt, always getting hurt. But I always demand to do my own stunts. I always face that challenge.
In this film, it wasn't just doing your own stunts. I mean, with John Wick, they paused production. This film was a smaller independent film. You're directing it. And you decide, I've broken the ribs. I'm going to keep fighting in the movie. I mean, I can barely carry on if I've like stubbed a toe. I'll be like, let's pause production for a while, guys. Let's chill.
But you're a man.
That's true. That is true. I have bigger toes. That's what you're
babies.
Saying. We have more toes.
Women have higher tolerance for pain.
Yes.
That's why we have the children and you guys don't.
That is very true. But I think of it as like, man, Halle Berry's a badass. I go like, you're breaking ribs. You know, you're in these fight scenes. You're doing these things. Like, you had to learn how to fight again for this. You learned martial arts for X-Men. Right?
A little bit more for Catwoman.
Yes.
I learned capoeira for Catwoman.
Like capoeira?
Yes, capoeira, yeah.
Wow.
Brazilian. Yeah,
okay.
I learned that because that was all a part of bringing that cat. It was low to the ground.
Oh,
it was sinewy.
Okay. What else? What other martial arts?
I did boxing and kickboxing. But for this, like the jiu-jitsu, the taekwondo, the judo, the wrestling.
It's terribly
Muay
hard.
Thai.
Jiu-jitsu is so hard.
So hard.
It's just like all clothes and fingers and like getting knocked in the face. Why would you do this?
Because it's so fun. It's also so fun. And I was a gymnast as a kid.
I didn't know
this. So, yeah. I was supposed to be Simone Biles. But Simone became Simone, not me. That was my dream, to go to the Olympics and win a gold medal someday.
Oh, you never. That could be your next film. You never know. Or you could make a film with Simone Biles.
Really?
Just bring the whole story together.
Maybe.
You know what I'm saying?
I could be the oldest woman to win a gold medal.
Anything can happen in this day and age. Your story is one that you're continuing to write. What did you love about directing that was different? Because you've been on this side of the lens for such a long time. Mm. There must have been something new that you discovered that you loved about being on the other side of the camera.
I think what I loved most was that I got to have this idea in my head, and I got to shape it and form it and reshape it and reform it, and I got to sort of bring to the screen pretty much exactly what I had in my head. Mm. And I was worried that I wouldn't be able to do that because we had such a low budget.
Right.
And while my days kept getting cut and I kept losing money left and right, it's hard in the independent world. What I loved was that as a Black woman, I got a story out of my body that was true to my gaze, that was true to my community, it was true to my race, to my sex, that all of it felt like an amalgamation of all the 3 years that I worked on this. I got to tell a true point of view about a sport from a female point of view. And had I not been myself, I don't know if that would have happened because I loved the sport and I also loved the drama of it at the same time. So I tried to put equal emphasis on both elements.
Well, I'll tell you this, you did a fantastic job.
Thank you, Jeff.
You had a lot of fun making it. It's a lot of fun watching it. And thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, people, Bruised is in select theaters right now and will be available on Netflix November 24th. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after this. Well, that's our show for tonight. But before we go, please consider supporting the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance, NAFSA. They support Native communities by restoring food systems that rebuild relationships with the land, water, plants, and animals that sustain all of us. If you want to support them in their work this Thanksgiving, then donate at the link below. Also, if you're in Grand Rapids, Michigan, or Chicago this weekend, my Back to Abnormal comedy tour is going to be in your city. And if you're in Seattle, Portland, or Kennewick, Washington, well, next weekend, I'm coming to you. And if you're in none of those places, well, then just ignore that this ever happened. Otherwise, head to backtoabnormaltour.com to get your tickets. Until next time, stay safe out there, get your vaccine, and remember, people, on Thanksgiving, start a political fight right after the turkey. That way, everyone will be distracted while you get all the desserts.
Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central. And stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.